Hello and welcome back to The Grafted In Perspective. This is a podcast that is dedicated to exploring what it means to be grafted into the Commonwealth of Israel through faith in our Messiah Yeshua. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thegraftedinperspective. You can also email the podcast at thegraftedinperspective@gmail.com. I'm blessed again to have Darren Huckey, who is the director of a messianic ministry called Emet HaTorah. He's also the author of two publications, the first one being Four Responsibilities of a Disciple, and Eight Lights, which is kind of a introduction into Hanukkah and the celebration of Hanukkah and what it means for us as disciples of Yeshua. So two great publications. And Darren, thanks so much for joining me again on the podcast. And we're going to kind of change topics this installment. And, you know, Passover is right around the corner. And I thought I'd have you on to kind of do sort of a introduction into what Passover is, whether or not it's still relevant for us as disciples of Yeshua, how we celebrate that. So thanks so much for spending your time with me on this installment of the Grafted In Perspective, Darren.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Gabriel. It's really good to be back. I really appreciate what you're doing, and we seem to cover some good topics when we discuss these things, and glad to know your listeners are getting a lot out of them. Passover is a great topic, especially a good introduction point. I know that for my wife and I, this is really our first, in a roundabout way, our first exposure to anything, you know, Hebrew roots, Messianic Judaism. And we joined a little non-denominational church shortly after we got married, and that was our first exposure. They did Passover, and they did a Passover celebration every year, and we were like, wow, that's interesting. What is this, you know? And so for us, it was an entry point to explore something ancient that would one day, you know, pretty much take over our lives, that we are now following to the best of our abilities this ancient path that Yeshua and the disciples would have been traveling, and we want to help others to learn about it as well, and Passover is a great starting place. So as far as Passover goes for today, especially, you know, 2,000 years removed in a non-temple context, you know, the best that anybody can actually do is just remember it. We can do our best to fulfill the biblical injunctions of partaking of the matzah and the bitter herbs, but of course, without the temple proper, we cannot participate of the actual Passover lamb. And then there's, of course, the Jew-Gentile question and equation on how that works in relationship to who can partake of the actual Passover lamb and circumcision, uncircumcision that Paul wrestles through, and those questions that are, you know, within Judaism. However, since we don't have to worry about that, let's not, you know, mess with it too much, but focus on what we can participate in and what we can learn from and what we can enjoy, and that is, you know, celebrating the day, partaking of the matzah, the bitter herbs, and doing whatever we can to place ourselves in that time period and reliving those events as if we were the ones coming out of Egypt. You know, when we do a Passover Seder, there's a little booklet that goes along with it. It's called Haggadah. And it's the order of service for the night. And several years ago, I started putting together my own, and we've been using this for many years now. And if you don't mind, I would like to read you a little bit from the introduction of that Haggadah, just to get the mindset of what we're supposed to do when we partake of that ceremony, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
It says, Tonight we participate in a radiant and joyful festival, which the Jewish people have celebrated for over 3,000 years. The Israelites began as a promise of God to one man, yet became as numerous as the stars in the sky. They have outlived countless centuries of hatred, violence, and attempts to exterminate God's chosen people, often in the name of Christ. From the persecution under Antiochus IV, the early church fathers, the Roman Emperor Constantine, the Inquisition, the Crusades, to the directives of Martin Luther, Adolf Hitler, the Jews continue to testify of a people of twin destinies, both persecution and survival. As followers of Messiah, we must remember that we have not replaced Israel, but merely been grafted into her. I thought you might like that.
Mm-hmm.
We have become adopted brothers and sisters with a people chosen by God from the very beginning of time. We must not become proud thinking we have replaced Israel in God's grand design. For the Apostle Paul admonishes, but if some of the branches were broken off and you, a wild olive shoot, were grafted in their place to share the richness of the olive tree, do not boast over the branches. If you do boast, remember, it is not you that support the root, but the root that supports you. You will say branches were broken off so that I may be grafted in. That is true. They were broken off because of their unbelief, but you stand fast only through faith. So do not become proud, but stand in awe. For if God did not spare the natural branches, neither will he spare you. And that's, of course, Romans 11:17-21. We celebrate tonight to remember the redemption of the Israelites through the Exodus event, as well as the redemption of the Gentiles by being engrafted into the root of the Jewish people through Messiah Yeshua. Just as the Israelites were freed from the slavery of the Egyptians, we have been set free from the bondage of sin and death. We can learn about these events from scriptures, from books, from films, lectures, and sermons. But we learn in quite a different way when we personally experience Passover. Tonight, we eat history. Tonight, we suffer as slaves in the land of Egypt. Tonight, we are delivered from the hand of Pharaoh. Tonight, we celebrate the victory of God as he parts the waters of the Red Sea to allow us to cross over. Tonight, much different from all other nights, we become more aware of who we are as a chosen people, a royal priesthood, called out from among the peoples of the earth. For on a night such as this, we went forth out of Egypt, leaving behind our lives as nameless slaves. On a night such as this, we rejoiced in our newly found freedom and identity. On a night such as this, Messiah Yeshua experienced our pain and passion in the final hours before his crucifixion, which would ultimately lead our redemption. Tonight we share the sorrow as well as the joy of our ancestors, the natural branches of Israel, as we remember what we should never forget. We were once slaves, but now we are free. Mm. And so to me that gives the reader an invitation to participate of this, you know, within this event and wrap their minds around it, so to speak, and get, as you would say, in the game. And put on the mindset that we need to enter into this event. And so it's just, to me, it's a good reminder every year to read that to the people that we have out to the house and participating in the Passover Seder with us as a family. And it sort of sets the tone for the night, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. That's incredible. Yeah, thank you for sharing that with us. And it kind of answers the question, you know, playing somewhat of a devil's advocate here, but there's so many people that have never experienced the beauty of Passover, the intimacy of having a Passover Seder in your home. Sometimes we dismiss that tradition or that commandment, if you will, as being something that was for ancient Israel on that side of the cross, if you will. And we never really understand or acknowledge its applicability for our lives and the spiritual dimension of us, you know, traversing through the Red Sea, leaving one bondage for another. You know, like you said, being bond servants to the law of sin and death, and crossing through and being grafted into the Commonwealth of Israel, and therefore sharing in that not only co-heirs, but also co-heirs in the sense that we have a common lineage, a common heritage. So being grafted into that commonwealth, it's common sense that we would also partake in something as significant as the passing over and the remembrance of that. So it kind of answers my question, what significance does Passover really have for anyone that's out there who professes faith in Jesus as their Messiah? And, you know, obviously it's huge because, well, first of all, he celebrated Passover. It was a very centrifugal event in the life of a Jew in the first century. You know, to see a father bring home a lamb and let it live in the household for 4 days. I can't imagine the amount of attachment that the children would have with that, you know, small and adorable lamb, and then for one day it just not be there. You know, it's kind of a picture of our Messiah, how, you know, he was in and out of the temple in Jerusalem and kind of being on trial for those few days before leading up to his slaughter, and the attachment that people had with him, and then one day he's you know, atoning for the sins of the world, really. So there is so many different dimensions of Passover in our lives as disciples of Yeshua. But let's say Darren, that, you know, I'm someone who has never experienced a Passover before, but I'm looking for that depth and that beauty, and wanting to maybe take that into my home and a personal level with my family, and introduce that that practice within, you know, my family. This coming, I guess, April 14th is when Passover is occurring this year. Where do I even start as a father, as a spiritual mentor in my home? What's the first place I need to go to find out how I conduct a Seder, how I bring Passover? And like you said, obviously in the context that we're in, without a temple proper, we're basically eating history. We're eating a meal that commemorates the Passover, and we can't make a Passover offering as commanded in Exodus necessarily, but we can partake in a Seder meal, which is, like you said, it has that same spiritual effect on us of commemorating the effect. But where do I start, I guess?
Okay. I would start, first of all, by making myself extremely familiar with the Passover event in the Torah. So, you know, reading the first, you know, 12, 13, you know, 18 chapters or so of the book of Exodus, Shemot, probably all the way up to, you know, chapter 20 of the giving of the Ten Commandments, getting that concept in our head of exactly what's going on there, what's taking place, because, you know, many people have been told these stories as a child, but have not read them or studied them as an adult. And so it's one thing to hear the story told, it's another thing to read it and study it for yourself. And so that's the first thing I would do as a father, is to be familiar with the Exodus account and find out exactly what's going on there in the biblical text, so you can be able to engage your family with this. The second thing I would do is start collecting Haggadot. And what that is, like I said, is the book or booklet that you would use to go through a Seder meal, a Passover meal. And by the way, Haggadah, it's a Hebrew word that literally means telling. And Seder is the same word that we get the word Seder from. It means a set order. So it's basically the order of service for the evening. And I would get multiple ones and choose the one that seemed to fit for your family, and then order, of course, multiple copies for the people that are attending the Seder. Every person will need their own copy if they can read, so they can follow along, so they can participate and to be engaged in the Seder. And and those two things right there are going to make it huge. And then I would begin to prepare to incorporate some fun things, some things that are meaningful for you as a family. Our family doesn't do Passover just like, you know, your family may do Passover. And our family may not do Passover like somebody else's family, but that's okay. This is all supposed to be customized and tailored, as long as we have the essentials in there, to our family and the way our family is designed and the way God has designed our family, for us to actually understand it, to get it. And, you know, the basics that we want to have are contained within the Haggadah. They're going to be the telling of the Exodus event. They're going to be the participation of the four cups of wine, partaking of those, and they're going to be the partaking of the matzah and the bitter herbs. And those are really the essentials. And just about, you know, should any Haggadah should cover those things. But there are a lot of, you know, just simply Jewish Haggadahs out there. There are an increasing number of Messianic Haggadot out there, and I'm sort of switching between Haggadahs and Haggadot. So Haggadot is just plural of Haggadah in Hebrew. So I would suggest doing that and then tailoring it to your family. I remember one year when our children were younger that when the plagues, when we were reading through the plagues, I had these little sort of rubbery type little, you know, frogs and insects and all that kind of stuff. And I, as we were dealing, I'd throw handfuls out onto the table, you know. And so just little fun things that would capture your children's attention, because the main purpose of this Seder meal is to transmit it to the next generation. Mm. We're told four times within the Exodus account, within the Torah, when your children ask you what this service means, this is what you're to tell them. And so we are supposed to pass it on to them so that they can pass it on to their children and to their children's children. And so those are the basics I would start with. And then you're going to get into things like, you know, how does Yeshua fulfill this picture that we have in Exodus? Where does he come into play? How did his death and resurrection fit into this sort of template we have here in Exodus? And maybe do some studies, you know, in the Gospels in that regard, and then be able to, through discussion and so forth, bring him into the picture and put the emphasis and the focus on him as our Passover lamb. There's some wise you will need as you read through the Haggadah, and I'm thinking particularly of the Afikoman. And if you've never done a Passover Seder, the Afikoman is the central point of a modern Seder. And like we said earlier, because we don't have Passover lamb as the central point, the Afikoman, which is a broken piece of matzah, becomes the central component of the Passover Seder. And it's interesting because, you know, this has been done within Judaism for, you know, 1,000, at least, you know, possibly 2,000 years. And really nobody within Judaism can tell you why they do it. But tradition is to take three sheets of matzah, which is the unleavened bread, looks like an oversized cracker, and put it in what's called a matzah tash. And it is a multi-compartmental cloth that holds three pieces of matzah separated by cloth. And towards the beginning of the Seder, this is taken, and the middle matzah is taken out. It is broken, and one part of that is put in a little white cloth or a little bag sometimes, and it is hidden away for the children to find later on. And it becomes this little game that they play. And then the other one's put back into the matzah tash. But it's interesting symbolism because that middle piece, we can see how it represents Yeshua in the simple fact that he is broken and that he is hidden away as if he were in the ground, in the tomb, for a time, and then he is in a sense, resurrected. This matzah is resurrected like Yeshua, and it becomes the central point of the Seder festivities and meal. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful picture that we see within Passover Seder, and a central component of faith for believers especially.
Yeah, it's very true. Now, obviously, Yeshua was killed on Passover. He became the Passover, and he was resurrected on first fruits. Luke 22, we find an interesting story where he's sort of having a Passover-themed meal, maybe a Seder. I think it could be some sort of ancient form of our modern-day Seder. It's sort of a banquet, if you will, but it's themed around Passover and his entry into Jerusalem and Passover. And he
right.
says some interesting words. He says, "Do this in remembrance of me." In Christendom, for the large part, we've taken that to mean that we are to take communion in remembrance of him. I don't know if that is a reciprocal decision or stance because of you know, maybe the outlawing of the observance of Passover early on in the third century, or if that's just Christendom's take on it. But in your opinion, is Luke 22, is he saying, do Passover in remembrance of me?
I think that's what he's saying. And I think it becomes even more clear if we put Paul's, writings in context, because the passage that we actually use for the institution of the could be called the Eucharist or communion is, in 1 Corinthians chapter 11.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 Corinthians chapter 11, if you look at it in context, this is actually the second time in this book that Paul references Passover or something about Passover.
Mm.
If we flip back first in chapter 5, he's dealing with the he's having to deal with a problem within the church. And so it's a judicial issue where there's been sexual immorality. And so he's giving instruction on how to deal with the situation. And within that, he compares the situation to leaven in a batch of dough at Passover time.
Yeah.
And so Let me just read that passage to you. It is in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, beginning with verse 6. It says, "Your boasting is not good," because these guys were basically harboring this man who was indulging in this sexual sin. And Paul got onto him pretty heavy. He says, "You need to clean this up quickly." It says, "Your boasting is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Cleanse out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you really are unleavened. For Messiah, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed. Let us therefore celebrate the festival." And what festival could he be referring to other than Passover, right?
Mm-hmm.
"Not with the old leaven, the leaven of malice and evil, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth."
Mm.
And so in this, he uses the Passover analogy to make a point of this sin permeating what was at one time something pure, something holy, this congregation. And if the people were unfamiliar with the Passover tradition and the Passover commandments and what was going on, that right there would not make a whole lot of sense to them.
Right.
Unless they just, studied a lot of the Hebrew scriptures, the Old Testament. But over in chapter 11, where we, we use this and we quote it before communion in our churches and so forth, he does this in a little bit different way. Starting in verse 23, he says, "For I received from the Lord what I also delivered to you, that the Master Yeshua, on the night when he was betrayed, took bread." So pause there for just a second. On the night he was betrayed, we're referring back to this Passover style meal. Mm-hmm. And we're saying Passover style because there's discrepancy between the Synoptic Gospels and the Gospel of John. But the Synoptic Gospels, all three of them say very clearly, they have Yeshua's words saying that he desires to eat a Passover meal with them. And that's what he's intending on doing with this meal. So Luke 22:14-15, for instance, says, when the hour is come, he sat down and the apostles were with him, and he said unto them, with desire I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer.
Mm.
And so we know at least there's Passover intent in this meal, whether it was an actual Seder meal or not. And so with that, when Paul refers back to the night that he was betrayed, he's referring to this meal, this Passover connection. And verse 24, and when he had given thanks, he broke it, referring to the bread, and said, this is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same way also, he took the cup after supper, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim your master's death until he comes. And it goes on about drinking, eating unworthily. But in this passage, to me, it's very clear that Paul is connecting the reader back with these events that would be surrounded by the Passover theme, the Passover elements, and so forth. And this did not become a Eucharist-styled tradition until much later when the believers wanted to separate themselves from anything Jewish for fear of persecution under the hand of the Romans.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, we can only naturally say that this is just a continuation of the biblical record and the biblical faith that was going on here.
Hmm.
And so for us, as modern-day believers, I think it's important that we put these things back into context, reconnect and re-engage with our faith in a first-century context, and do more and look at this in a deeper way than we have previously. And part of that, to me, is engaging in a Passover Seder and experiencing what our master would have experienced, you know, many, many, many times during his life.
Right.
And then, of course, the final hours of his life before he was taken to the execution stake.
Right, right. Yeah, so at the very least, you know, we should entertain the idea of introducing Passover into our homes almost as a fulfillment of 1 Corinthians 11:1, you know, Paul is saying, be an imitator of me as I am of Messiah. So at the very least, because Messiah did this his whole life and was the pinnacle of Passover, we should be imitators of that. And obviously you cover that in the four responsibility of disciples, that you, mm-hmm. you were to emulate your rabbi.
Right.
And to the point that, you know, obviously your goal is to be there's to be no distinguishing between the two.
Right.
But we're cutting it close on time. But I want to make sure that we get everyone in on the second part that we're gonna pull over and kind of talk about some of the deeper underlying aspects of Passover, specifically some of the spiritual elements that Passover can add, some of the depth that celebrating Passover can add to your daily walk, and then also the idea of chametz. The idea of getting leaven out of your home, and I think you have a great teaching on that and great understanding on that you're going to bring to the table on part two of this Passover series
right.
that we're doing. But I think we're going to call it guarding the matzah. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. Yes. Great, great.
What we're going to do is we're going to take Exodus 12, and there's a section in there that you know, the Hebrew can be read two different ways, and it depends on how you read it, as to the lesson that you can learn from it.
Mm.
Very interesting.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously Paul is alluding to something on a very spiritual and deeper level when he's talking about, you know, the leaven of the Pharisees, or the leaven, a little bit of leaven can leaven the whole lump. It's important that we know what leaven is, both on a physical and spiritual dimension.
Right.
So we know to avoid it and know to rid our homes of it on an annual basis, if not a daily basis.
Right.
So, yeah, it's definitely something that I look forward to learning from you on this topic and bringing to the Grafted In audience. But, Darren, thanks so much for joining me on this installment. And
a pleasure.
For those listening, make sure you stick around for part two. It'll be out a week from now. This has been The Grafted In Perspective.